Planet Perth Season 2 is sponsored by Lawson Flats, Perth's newest club for creatives to work, connect and play. Learn more at lawsonflats.com. It was a day like any other. Warm, sunny, with light winds rustling the autumn leaves. But Monday the 22nd of March 2010 ended as anything but.
When I went in, the sky was clear, and when I came out 45 minutes later, there was really ominous, it was really oppressive, it was hot, and there was this wind.
The experience that you'll hear about the Perth hailstorm is how caught off guard we all were.
That morning, we saw all the ingredients lining up like I have never seen before in my career for Perth.
Wind picked up as it came through because the hail wasn't just dropping straight down, it was coming in on an angle, bouncing off things and making its way further.
And my office looked out over the duck pond. I watched the ducks getting absolutely smashed to bits.
But I just remember looking out onto the horizon where the ocean was and seeing all these flashes of lightning.
It started to rain, and then it started to rain some more, and then there was thunder and lightning and hailstones and cats and dogs and apocalypse. And
never seen it before and probably won't see it again in my life.
The 2010 hailstorm still lives in the memories and perhaps on the bonnets of cars across Borloo. By the end of the day, gusts reached 120 kilometres per hour, with torrential rain flooding streets and hailstones the size of golf balls recorded pelting the Perth city. Oddly, I was out of the country at the time, but first became aware of the goings-on in Perth when a colleague frantically called to say water was pouring from the roof of my business. I was also amazed when I was sent videos of people kayaking down Oxford Street as flooding increased across the CBD. The damage to vehicles, homes and buildings, most significantly UWA's Winthrop Hall, led to an unprecedented and lengthy clean-up that lasted weeks. According to the Insurance Council of Australia data, to date, the 2010 hailstorm has cost folk $1.34 billion. Indeed, experts say it was a 1-in-100-year weather event, the likes of which Perth has never seen since.
So we can now see on the radar, we could see this big, angry-looking blob coming towards, starting to come south. And we were concerned. We knew that this was going to come and hit Perth. But in Perth itself, it was still blue sky. It was still, you really, if you weren't paying attention, you wouldn't have known what was about to come.
That was Bureau Senior Meteorologist Andrew Burton, who was part of the team that issued the thunderstorm warning that fateful day.
There was a lot of anticipation in the office. In fact, we'd seen that there was things were probably going to set themselves up the day before. So each day we do a bit of an analysis and we look at all the ingredients that go into making a thunderstorm and where they might form and what kind of thunderstorm they might be, exactly what weather they might produce. And so we try to keep track of that as events are coming up to us. So we would have looked at that the previous day. And then in the morning, particularly because, of course, these are summer thunderstorms, they're usually building up during the afternoon. So every morning we would do a detailed analysis to look at all those ingredients and how they were lining up. And that morning we saw all the ingredients lining up like I have never seen before in my career for Perth.
Today, come with me to learn more about the lead up to one of our city's most significant weather events and the far-reaching consequences of what we colloquially dub the Perth 2010 hailstorm. Perth is one of the most isolated cities in the world. So far removed from the rest of the globe, it might as well be its own planet. Join me, Jeff Bullen, as I take a deep dive into the weird, wacky, and unexplained history of our eccentric city, digging up memories of bygone icons, personalities, and events. This is Planet Perth. Can you
basically take us through for those of us that weren't there. I was lucky, unlucky enough to be out of Perth at the time. Can you describe the conditions it brought?
So as we're saying, by the time we got to lunchtime, there was clouds starting to form and it's quite a warm day and it's quite humid. And so most people are probably not outdoors doing too much physical activity if they don't have to.
Because it was pretty warm and muggy.
Pretty warm and muggy.
No point in hanging the washing out.
No. But the sun's shining and it's really looking like a beautiful day otherwise.
Yep.
And then in the office, we're starting to, as I said, look very closely at that radar, expecting something's going to start forming. And then it did. And yet in Perth, we can now see on the radar, we could see this big, angry-looking blob coming towards, starting to come south. And we were concerned. We knew that this was going to come and hit Perth. But in Perth itself, it was still blue sky. It was still, you really, if you weren't paying attention, you wouldn't have known what was about to come.
Right. Which, yeah, there's a big wake-up call for flat earthers out there.
And then I guess if you were outside, the next thing you'd notice is that darkening of the sky to the north, and you could see some really ominous-looking clouds start to come, and you could see they were really thick, really dark.
So tall stacks of clouds?
Tall, very tall,
yep.
And very thick.
And covering from horizon to horizon as well, pretty much.
Pretty much.
For anybody in Perth.
For anybody in Perth. Maybe off to the west, you wouldn't see it, but yes, it was. You could see that there was something big coming. One of the things that we often don't have in Perth is a lot of humidity. This day we had what we call dew point temperatures, but it's just a measure of the amount of water vapour in the air, and it was really high for Perth. Not high if you come from Darwin or from Brisbane or elsewhere, but for Perth, very high. And that's one of the important ingredients to feed in and give that energy to the thunderstorm and to produce the rain, obviously.
So that was the first red flag for you, yeah?
That was one of them. We were looking for temperatures to get into the low to mid 30s, which was going to give enough energy to those parcels of air near the surface to be pushed up and start rising up and give the energy to the thunderstorm.
So tick, we had that. How hot did it get?
It did get up to the around the mid-30s.
So it would have been pretty uncomfortable with that degree of humidity.
Yes, not a great day.
Yeah.
but we were, the interesting thing about it was this was not a day, we had blue sky everywhere. There was nothing on the radar in the morning at all. And one of my teams, after we'd done the convective analysis, as we call it, when we do look at all those ingredients, was sitting in front of that radar screen when there was nothing to see, waiting for it to appear. That's how sure he was that this is about to happen, and we're going to be there ready to warn for this as soon as it happens.
So our immediate area, the radar didn't show any precipitation?
Nothing had happened yet.
God damn.
We were just starting to see on the satellite the clouds forming, but there was no rain in those clouds to be picked up by the radar yet.
That is crazy. So I imagine the energy in the office was like, I mean, this is like show day for you guys.
Absolutely, yes. There was a buzz in the office. And one of the key things, the reasons that we were anticipating this to be such a big day was because I think everybody here is familiar with the fact that in Perth, most of our weather comes from the west. And we can look and we see in a cold front's coming from the west, we often see the individual clouds being steered from the northwest down to the southeast. And that's true for our severe thunderstorms, for our thunderstorms in general. So they're often forming during summer just inland from Perth, often on a sea breeze front or something like that. Then they'd be steered out into the wheat belt, into those country towns. And so that's probably one of the biggest reasons why we don't get a lot of severe thunderstorms in Perth. Now, in this case, when we looked at the atmosphere, we could see that there was actually a low-pressure system, but one in the middle levels of the atmosphere that was changing that steering pattern. And it was changing it so that any storms that formed just inland from the coast were actually going to come straight down the coast or actually slightly from the east towards the west, so coming back towards the coast, which is a really rare setup. When we learn meteorology and we learn the meteorology of thunderstorms, then all these ingredients, we get a very good feel for what level of those ingredients really contributes to a severe thunderstorm. So we kind of understood where this fitted in meteorological terms, how unusual it was, not just for Perth, but in the country, or how much energy was going to be available for this storm, for example. So we had that kind of a context, which was why there was that buzz in the office.
So how common are severe weather events? Is a locality more inclined to receive more, you know, severe weather events, or, you know, is an area like Perth pretty dull and boring when it comes to having to predict severe weather.
Globally, I guess Perth is has a pretty mild climate, really. We don't get exposed to a lot of severe weather. We obviously have the severe winter fronts occasionally that come through, and I'm sure everybody has a memory of one of those.
Yep.
And we have the severe thunderstorms, which I'm sure we'll talk about more, but we don't actually get a lot of those in Perth. So if you can compare us to places like the North America, where you might get freezing rain and all those sorts of wonderful things, as well as getting tropical cyclones and severe thunderstorms and fire weather, and I think we're pretty lucky to live here in Perth.
So, like, pretty lucky compared to areas like the northwest of Western Australia or the southeast of America.
Absolutely. When you think, just thinking about Australia, there's big variations in the kinds of weather that people are exposed to and how much they're exposed to. So, of course, the area between Broome and Exmouth is often referred to as Cyclone Alley because it's the most cyclone-prone coastline in Australia, and it's one of the most cyclone-prone coasts in the world. People often don't realise that just as many hurricane force, so we call them severe tropical cyclones, in the US they call them hurricanes, same kind of beast, we get as many of those crossing that Pilbara coastline as they do in the Gulf of Mexico.
So everyone has a story of the day. What about yours? Were you personally impacted?
I was lucky that I wasn't really impacted, except that I did realise that these storms were going to come through just as my kids would be walking home from primary school.
Oh.
Now, I normally would have done...
Wow, bureaucratic inside knowledge. How did you play it?
Well, I immediately rang some friends and made sure that they got picked up from school and taken home. And I had a surf ski, an ocean racing ski that was outside, and I didn't want that damaged with the hail, so I got that put in somewhere safer.
Well, wise, and it gave something the kids to paddle around on afterwards.
The kids didn't really kind of get why this was different than most people in Perth until it was actually happening.
It's like movie worthy, you know. I can just see you on the phone saying, but no, this one's deadly. And everyone's, no, don't worry about that. There's just the crazy meteorologists. And then, no, the storm. It's something Netflix has to pick up.
Planet Perth.
The University of Western Australia was one of the hardest hit locations in Perth. The iconic Winthrop Hall was decimated during the storm, with its famous stained glass windows destroyed by golf ball sized hailstones.
There was myself and a number of other staff without being called in. We just all turned up first thing the next morning to start dealing with it.
That was UWA Theatre House Manager Mark O'Reilly, who was a casual member of staff at the time and remembers the clean-up like it was yesterday.
So we had, obviously, Winthrop Hall, which is a pretty iconic space on campus, the clock tower. So we had all the stained glass windows there all smashed in. So that was, you know, getting cleaned up and finding all the bits of glass in all the hidden spaces around the place that we
sort
had to pick
anything
up.
Anything that was northwesterly facing copped it.
Well, yeah, the whole building's fascia is facing north onto the main road in there, and that's the iconic image of the campus that they sell with everything. There was bits of glass bashed through into all sorts of spaces. I'm pretty sure some of it ended up in the pipe organ as well. A few of the little spots in there, so it's... There was just lots of it damaged in that building.
It took up to a year for the new windows to be installed, with the replacement sourced from one of the last manufacturers of cathedral glass in the world. Though Mark says the cleanup wasn't too strenuous, his team did have to make some unique considerations.
Planet Perth.
They did have to then work out how to protect it, and because it's heritage listed, they managed to sandwich some plastic sheeting, or I guess perspex or something like that, but across the windows from both sides so that they protected what was there while they worked out how to resolve that problem and get it back up to scratch.
But it's quite an extensive campus, and you've got a number of theatres there. It wouldn't have just been Winthrop Hall. Would have copped it.
The other venues weren't too bad because most theatres don't have external windows. They're big boxy rooms and well protected in some fashion. I mean, there was leaks and things all over campus and that as well. But the one that really hurt us was the Somerville Auditorium, so where you guys do In the Pines as well. So we were running the the Perth Festival films season at that point. It was towards the tail end, so last 4 weeks to go. But we had to shut down because the trees were kind of stripped bare almost.
Whoa.
Just all the pine needles and everything was smashed off the trees. And if you're familiar with the space, if you've ever been there, the deck chairs, the whole floor of the theatre was covered in pine needles up, like above the level of the chairs. So
that is crazy, really?
It was nuts. I mean, you can still, if you go there, you can still look up and see some of the older trees that have been damaged. I think one on the north side of the seating area copped it pretty bad, and it looks pretty sickly at the top, but they've recovered now.
Was there time to get the screen down, or did that cop it as well?
No, the screen didn't come down. Luckily, the screen has some pretty solid protection on the back of it, which was getting hit by the hailstorm, so there's little markings on the front, but not so much.
How long did the cleanup take it at UWA until you could return to life as normal?
Well, the cinema, the outdoor films, that was probably 3 days we shut down, that we had to get a crew in and get external help to come and clear everything because it was pretty onerous. The hall with the smashed glass, I mean, that was a number of years that it took to finally resolve it, to source suitable materials and then get it all imported into the country and put up properly by qualified individuals, which none of those really exist, you know, when the place has been built 90 years before all that.
Well, and there would have been a shortage of people available already anyhow, because it would have been, damage repair is in high demand.
Yeah. I mean, I ended up meeting a number of friends who moved to Perth because of the storm.
Right.
In panel beating industry, because they just knew there was another 5 or 10 years worth of work they could get out of this storm, and it was a good opportunity. They came over from New Zealand, so
right,
looking for not easy work, but work they were super capable of doing, and good pay and that.
So. The silver lining to the very dark cloud. Yeah,
so met them through their kids at school, so that was interesting to see that it had that result as well.
So why do you think the Perth folk still resonate with this story of the hailstorm?
Why? I don't know. I think we just like a good tale, you know. Everyone likes to spin a yarn, and if you were there, you've got something to say about it. Yeah, and, you know, Perth was starting to become a pretty big place by then. 10 years before that, it was still fairly small, and you kind of knew everyone around town in some fashion, and but by that point, there'd been a lot of people moving into town, so...
Well, it wasn't that long before then that Hammersley was the outer reaches.
Yeah, it was getting close, yeah.
Nangara Road was still surrounded by pine trees.
Yeah, it used to have a big mound there too. I don't think that exists anymore either. But, it was not too far north from that, and now you can drive for another 40 minutes and still be in suburbia.
Next time this is going to happen, the damage bill's going to be just a little bit bigger.
Well, yeah. If it's the same storm, it'll just come in that same little line across Perth, and it might not be too different. I mean, it'll cost a lot more, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And there'll be a lot more people talking about it, that's for sure, as well.
Yeah, the storm will look the same. The damage on the ground will be much different.
And the story will get bigger and bigger every time it's told.
So, what can we take away from one of the most significant weather events? Andrew Burton reckons the devastation truly was a 1-in-100-year event, the likes of which Perth has never seen since, and hopefully won't see for a little while.
I think it was a wake-up call more so for the general community. For us, it was, wow, look at this. This is amazing, and this shows that we can get hailstones that big, and that we can get, if these ingredients line up, that we can see an event that's incredibly severe. I hope that the same thing happened in the community. What I suspect happens in the community is that there is that knowledge, and it is sort of community does get a better understanding of the risk that's there, but that slowly erodes over time.
Well, it's as easy these days as just having the bomb app on your phone.
And the beauty of technology like the app is that it can push to you what's relevant to where you are.
One thing is for sure, everyone has a story from that day, and it will forever go down in Perth folklore as one of the most intense storms we have ever seen. Thank you to Andrew Burton, Kate Holmes, Mark O'Reilly, and all those who offered their time on this episode of Planet Perth. My name is Jeff Bullen, host of Planet Perth, and our executive producer is Danielle Raphael. Our assistant producer is Rachel Lang. The theme music you can hear is Can't Blame the City by local band The Mackerels. Our artwork is by Hannah Coakley. This podcast was produced and recorded at RTR FM on Whadjuk Noongar Boodja. We pay our respects to elders past and present. This land was never ceded. Next time on Planet Perth, what would you do if your neighbourhood was suddenly taken over by a cult? Bruce Menzies was a young, educated family man when he decided to join in. That's next time on Planet Perth. Planet Perth Season 2 is sponsored by Lawson Flats, Perth's newest club for creatives to work, connect, and play. Learn more at lawsonflats.com.